Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. According to a 2017 study from Common Sense Media, 98% of households with children ages 8 and under now have access to a mobile device like a tablet or a smartphone. That's an increase of 52% from 2011.
The organization says children's overall screen time has remained pretty steady for years at a bit over 2 hours a day. But more of its use is on handheld devices. And while there are studies that show trends with technology in children, there is yet to be any professional consensus on what amount of technology is good or bad for kids.
And that's where Nicole Dreisky comes in. Her work as executive director of the International Children's Media Center involves creating approaches for integrating technology and media in 21st century classrooms. Dreisky believes it's good that parents are involved in the equation, but hard limits or just turning off devices are not necessarily the answers to their concerns about kids and screen time.
Dreisky's recent book is called The Upside of Digital Devices. She talked with Lake Effect's Gabrielle Powell about how we can shift the perception and use technology as a helpful tool.
One of the things that I did to change that conversation was start from the positive. And here's what I mean by that. I talked to parents and teachers and counselors and pediatricians. And for 2 years, I asked some really simple questions. But it started with this. What does a great relationship with screens and technology look like? How do we want our kids to engage these really powerful devices? We're not powerless. We're not helpless. Let's help our kids build a positive relationship with this technology. And so what I started with after getting their wish list, you know what I mean? They came up with the things they wanted. So the first thing was to stop segregating technology from the rest of positive childhood and family experiences. And of course, I understand why parents do it at the get-go. Like I said, they're trying to balance and build up all the non-screen experiences. But that creates an unnatural vacuum around screen time so that it's separate from positive family interactions. And sometimes that isolation can become toxic. So we encourage getting started with something we lovingly call screen talk. Just talk during or after you watch a program or play a game or an app. And you get such a great sense of who your kids are and what they might need from you. Because that's, I think, where parents are most confused, you know? They think that the only things their kids need from them are structures or telling them to turn it off. Well, I think, you know, if you look back 20 years, the people who were really encouraging dialogue around screens were the pediatricians, the Fred Rogers Center, the Erickson Institute, all the early childhood folks. We're talking about dialogue. But if you think about it, what's the dialogue? It happens in every home in America. It's three words. Turn it off. Not a dialogue. And also what happens is then you come in as the bad guy and you always have to pull the parent card, and it creates this emotional tug of war around screen time that can be alleviated by engaging kids during screen time the same, and what I'm talking about, especially when they're very young, engaging them during screen time the same way you do when you're reading a book aloud to them. And that's the strength of the Screen Smart program. That's the program on which the book is based. It's been run in dozens of schools and with thousands and thousands and thousands of kids and parents. And what we learned is that kids want to talk. They want to talk about what they're experiencing. They want to share with parents and with teachers, but we never give them a chance to do that with screens because there's no place in our culture for them to do it, and that needs to change.
Well, I think something that you discuss in the book that I found really fascinating is that we can apply these concepts maybe a little bit to our adult lives.
Right, and Gabrielle, that's excellent because, I mean, this is why I get 80 intern applicants a year for the International Children's Media Center. What am I talking about? It's 80 applicants a semester because young people are not oblivious, excuse me, they're very aware of the lures of the market and the intentions of those who are developing games and software, et cetera. And so, again, remember, starting by building a positive relationship with technology means, and here's the core message of the book, turn on the mind before turning on the screen. Technology isn't bad. It's what we do with our minds while using the technology that counts. And so the screen smart approach uses screen time to teach children about the power of their own minds. Once I start doing this with children, parents get so excited. We get calls because they'll call us the next day and say, Nicole, this stuff really works. And what we're teaching kids is to be aware of how they're being affected. But you don't do that by telling them that they're being affected. You do that by asking them how they think they're being affected. And so an operative question, you know, in lesson number one is, do you think it's possible to watch screens for too much time? Is it possible? And you hear the tone in my voice? I'm not judging. I may have my own opinion, but it doesn't interfere with my getting a real answer from kids. I've asked 3-year-olds that question. I've asked 30-year-olds that question. I've asked 16-year-olds that question. When they answer it, they start coming up with all of the symptoms that we know kids are having. And some of them are hilarious. A 3-year-old once told me, pointing to his head, things get stuck in here, which was a wonderful thing for a 3-year-old to be aware of and for the other 4- and 5-year-olds in that class to hear about, because they'd never thought about whether it was possible to watch too much and what happened. And then they started talking about how their eyes would burn. Or one little guy said, you know, I think I was asleep, but my eyes were still open. Or they talk about drooling, or they talk about waiting too long to pee. I mean, they're aware. And but think of it this way, Gabrielle. Instead of putting my finger up in the air and saying, do you know if you watch too much, these things can happen to you? Oh, how open would you be if somebody said that to you?
Not very.
It's just you shut down. It's like, thank you, hello, go away. How do you know me? What's important is for kids to start noticing how they're being affected and talking about it. And so under the guise of a program that measurably improves literacy and empathy and inferential reasoning, we're actually laying the foundation for healthy screen habits.
Yeah, and I think something that we don't often think about is that transition from discussing just what's happening on the screen versus discussing what the events that are taking place, the images that are being flashed across the screen, how that affects us.
Exactly. It's really using this content to teach children about their own minds, about themselves. And, you know, in the book, Gabrielle, there's a long chapter that talks about screen detox for us, for ourselves, for we the adults. One of the things that happens quite naturally when you're noticing with your child how they're being affected is that you start noticing how you're being affected. Teachers came up to us and said, and actually they write in their evaluations, but I remember when I put her in the book, she said, I started noticing that I was really uncomfortable. It was making my heart rate faster and I was breathing heavily. And I realized it was affecting me physically. So I changed what I was watching. I actually just turned it off and got out a magazine. And nobody has to tell us to do these things. What we have to do is be able to notice that certain kinds of content elevate cortisol. It stresses you. It creates a buildup of chemicals in your brain that stops you from sleeping, allows you to stay awake all night, is what I was going to say. But again, noticing how you're responding, noticing what goes through your mind, even knowing that your mind is active, is a really powerful way of creating distance and self-control, distance between you and the screen. Self-control so that you know what you should do when you are watching too much or when you are being affected or when we are gaming too much. You know, in the book, I put some of the extreme outcomes that have happened in Asia where young people in their 20s were gaming for 36 hours straight. They forgot about their bodies. They didn't hydrate. Their kidneys shut down. They died. It's happened more than once. And that's a lack of awareness of our bodies that is really detrimental moving forward when we know we're going to be using these devices. So we have to use them in ways that are mindful and healthy and that include self-awareness. And I'm not saying you do that, you know, every second. That's just not possible. But having check-ins, you know, every half hour, every hour, get up and walk around, look at something green, hydrate, do things for yourself that are going to bring your body back in balance, because the screen is a wonderful, wonderful servant, but a really, really terrible master.
I would have to agree. So I think parents are very nervous about approaching this because they have this idea that it's a terrible thing to have all this media in their house. But I think in the book, you really explain that it can be detrimental, but it can also be very good. And you gave some examples of some short films at the end of the book that are really good examples for discussions, things that can facilitate a discussion between a parent and a child. Could you give a little bit on why those particular films are so good at jumpstarting this conversation?
Well, in part, they're not trying to sell anything. you know, they're more concerned with elevating children's minds and giving them a really positive developmental experience than they are about building a brand. You know what I mean? It's a different consciousness in some of these independent films. I would also say that, for example, there are some wonderful series, like Tumbleleaf is in there. That was produced by Amazon Studios. Tumbleleaf is a fantastic program because of the interactions between the characters. It teaches emotional intelligence. There are hundreds of details on screen that you can point out in each viewing that you do with a child. Remember when I said, think of watching narrative content on a screen the same way you would reading a book aloud to a child. Do you think a parent motor mouse through a bedtime story? No, they're interacting, they're cuddling, the kids are pointing to different images on the page, and they're talking about them. So they'll make what we would just call real-world connections. Yeah, I saw a dog like that in the park. Oh, mommy, look at this over here. Are bunnies really pink? No, bunnies aren't. But, you know, they talk about everything in the book, and especially well-loved books that have been read 100 times. When you think about that process, that interaction, that is the model for what you want to do with your children when they first start watching screens. And certainly this process works, if you lay the foundation for it, well into the double-digit years. They care. They know that you care about what they're thinking and feeling, and so they exchange ideas with you. And parents can use this kind of positive kids media to teach anything you need to teach for kindergarten readiness. For heaven's sake, there are going to be colors. You can point out the colors. There are going to be shapes. You can point out the shapes. There are going to be certain times when you can see how many characters are on a screen and you're going to count them together. The same, those are all strategies that parents use when they're reading books with kids. It's just natural. It unfolds naturally. What I'm trying to do is break down the unnatural barrier that exists between screens and all the positive things we do in our lives, as if screens are somehow innately toxic. After one of our 12-session residencies at a school where 20 languages were spoken among the student body, and I'll never forget it, the kindergarten teacher called me with this awed tone in her voice saying, He just told me to turn off the screen because he's not being screen smart. She was talking about her son, who was a kindergartner in another teacher's class. It was a phenomenal moment. And we know that kids are doing that. We know that kids are going home after learning to be screen smart in school, and looking for different content. They're monitoring their own responses. They're noticing what makes them feel terrible, and they're opting not to watch it or not to play it. It's a huge shift, and it can come from families. It can come from children. It does not have to start in the schools, which is where I've done, I would say, 70% of the work on this methodology.
I think we don't give kids enough credit a lot of times because we assume they're so much younger than us. They don't know everything about the world, but they are pretty in tune with what's going on in their own heads if you give them the chance to do so.
Brilliant. That's the core message. But in order for us to gain their trust and become their mentors, we have to normalize screen time so that it's more like the rest of the things we do with them when we're all having fun. Instead, it's everybody on their screen independently, by themselves. Not helpful.
Nicole Dreisky, thank you so, so much for joining us.
Thank you, Gabrielle.
Nicole Dreisky is Executive Director of the International Children's Media Center and author of The Upside of Digital Devices, How to Make Your Child More Screen Smart, Literate, and Emotionally Intelligent. She spoke with Lake Effect's Gabrielle Powell.